The Man in Line with Andy Wint, furnished by Magic Carpets.
Good afternoon. It's 6 minutes past 12 midday, live from the Isle of Man. This is Manx Radio, and this is The Man in Line till 1 o'clock today. Well, you heard in the news since the last update yesterday, 8 further confirmed positive tests for coronavirus. It's 158 now. 150 instructed to self-isolate, 7 being treated at the hospital. There have been 1,539 concluded tests, 220 people awaiting results, and 81 people awaiting tests. 80 individuals are presumed to have recovered from the virus. From now through till 1, our Health Minister, Health and Social Care Minister, David Ashford, is with us on the line. Good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy. Thank you for having me on.
Jolly good. First things first, have you heard how the Chief Minister is?
I have spoken to the Chief Minister this morning. He chaired remotely, of course, from home and meeting of the National Strategy Group, and he is doing fine. As I said yesterday, he's showing mild symptoms and we're waiting the test result back.
Okay. Can you clear up the situation with the wards at Nobles? Which wards are looking after coronavirus?
So wards 1 and 2 have been converted to COVID-19 wards, and obviously we currently have 2 patients in the intensive care unit as well. We are also doing works up at Nobles at the moment around the old Newlands, which will give us an extra 50-bed capacity there as well.
Okay, lots of questions in today. We're taking calls as well and emails and texts, but lots came in through the night. First one is, this is from Margaret. I think the government's doing brilliantly with many things, and thank you. One concerning thing is 16 ventilators. We're short compared to other countries. I'd appreciate there are many other treatments for COVID-19, but for very ill patients, ventilators are needed. Sadly, we could end up with short of ventilators. What's the situation?
Right, we have 16 ventilators, which actually, if you work it against other countries on a per head population basis, the Isle of Man is actually up there in the league table. So we actually do have quite a few ventilators when you do it on a per head of population basis. In terms of ventilation, though, it's not just the case of having ventilators, it's being able to operate them as well, because they are, very, by the very nature, very high dependency. So it's about having the necessary trained staff, the oxygen in place. But one of the things that's got to be emphasised is there is a lot of, obviously, international media attention on ventilators, and rightly so, because they understand that part of it. But the number of patients that actually will require ventilation in terms of patients is actually quite low. Most patients who require oxygen will require what I like to term intermediate oxygen therapy. So that is simply done with an oxygen mask or through what's called a nose cannula, which many people will have seen. And we have roughly at the moment, I believe, just over 40 of those, and we're ramping up supply. So that's the sort of treatment that, for instance, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is currently undergoing. So it doesn't mean because someone's in ICU that they necessarily need to be ventilated.
What's the situation with PPE, personal protection equipment, at the hospital?
So PPE is flowing into the island. There is very tight guidelines about when PPE should be used. People will be able to find that on the government website. And we do deal with nursing homes as well, etc., and also out in the community as to when PPE should be used. We received 65,000 FFP masks, which is the masks that staff wear when dealing with COVID-positive patients. And they came into the island yesterday. And I think, as I gave in the press briefing last week, we had 95,000 units of PPE coming in. So the flow is continuous.
Are there COVID-19 symptom patients in hospital who haven't been tested?
Right, there's not people with symptoms who haven't been tested. There are people who are awaiting results. So we currently have, as you said there in your intro piece, we currently have 7 hospital admissions of people who have tested positive. We have 18 patients currently in hospital awaiting their results back.
Are pneumonia patients tested for COVID-19?
If their symptoms are showing in a similar way, then yes, they will be. But it is all based around symptoms. So in terms of pneumonia, obviously, it depends what they've had in the build-up to it. So if they've been showing the temperature, if they've actually had the breathing difficulties and they're admitted, then obviously they will be tested accordingly.
This is a note in from Paul who said, I want to find out more about tracing. How many people work in public health on this? How does the contact tracing, and is it effective?
Contact tracing is very effective. The contact tracing, I believe, has now contacted and isolated over 200 people across the island. In terms of public health, it's not just public health. We have built up a base of other staff to assist public health on this. The contact tracing is absolutely key, because what the whole point of testing is to break the chain of the virus. And this is where the UK got a problem when they stopped doing the community testing. They lost track of the virus in the community. So the aim of the testing and the contact tracing is basically to contact people who have been in close proximity to that particular person for a good period of time, to get them to self-isolate in case they're asymptomatic, so they're not passing it on to other people. So it breaks the community chain. In terms of contact tracing, it depends upon the individual. Every case is unique because everyone does different things in their daily lives and has different interactions with people. At the moment, contact tracing is made easier by the lockdown that we're in, because you would expect people not to be generally in contact with people other than members of their own household at this current time. But prior to the lockdown, obviously, if it would depend upon the circumstances. So if you had someone who, say, was working in close proximity to someone, and for over 15 minutes, they were touching the same things, they were using the same things, then that would activate public health to contact that person and tell them to self-isolate. If someone previously had been on a flight, they would look to who had been sat next to that person for the duration of the flight, who was in front of them, who was behind them. And there's a whole science behind it in individual circumstances.
Tina's note that said, you told us, Minister, the majority of positive cases fall into the 19 to 35 age group. Is this because the elderly and vulnerable either self-isolate at home or in residential care homes aren't being tested? Therefore, their figures aren't showing up on the daily active figures which are being broadcast.
Well, no, it's not the fact that people in care homes aren't being tested. Let's put that the first thing. If you actually look at the range of age ranges being tested, it's actually a good spread of age ranges. So it's not the case we're just testing one particular age group and that's why they're emerging with the positive results. Our range across the actual tests undertaken is across the whole board. We've had everything from late 90s all the way down to children. But what seems to be emerging, I think, is the fact that initially the advice about social distancing, unfortunately, those in the younger age bracket didn't take it quite as seriously as others. I think also, as a government, we were pretty quick to get out there talking about people in the community self-isolating if they felt vulnerable, or older people keeping distance. We did that at a much earlier stage than almost any government in the world. We were talking about things like that before we even had a confirmed case. And so I think that has had an effect in being able to, not remove, but slow down the spread in the older age range.
What's the youngest and the oldest person? What are the ages of the people who have been confirmed positive?
So my understanding is that I can't give exact age ranges, but the youngest is actually a child. So we have had a child confirmed positive, and the oldest is about the age of 90.
We're with David Ashford, the Minister of Health and Social Care, and let's turn now to the returnees. When will the first boat with the exiled Manxes arrive?
So the aim is for that to be on the 15th of April currently, and the plans are being drawn up as we speak.
You can't obviously give us details, but in broad terms, they'll come back, they'll be isolated, they won't have any visitors, they will have exercise, and how long will it be for?
So that will be for 14 days. So that'll be 14 days after their return. They'll be taken to a facility where they will be kept for the 14 days. They will have access outdoors for exercise. But obviously it will be limited in what they won't be able to go back home until that 14-day period is completed.
Can you tell us if it's going to be a rural or an urban location?
So there's two locations that we have currently earmarked, and our clinicians are looking at those to see how practical they are. In both cases, well, the way I would describe one is rural and one is semi-rural.
When will our testing facility be up and running?
So the testing facility should be available within the next 10 days on Ireland. We're still on course for that on the original timescales that we have planned and in place.
We've got a note in. Many people, by the way, are praising the conduct of the government at the moment. And a lot of people saying, where did the strategy for keeping the public on the Isle of Man informed come from?
It developed over time, to be honest. There was no great master plan at the very start that this was the way we were going to do it. But we did have stages planned out. I think when you look back to my very, very early interviews, every interview I did, I emphasised that different actions would be taken at different stages. So, for instance, we had plans around what would happen when the first case emerged on Ireland, what happened when we found out we had our first community transmission, and there'd be different stages along there. In terms of the communication, we felt it was important to get it out daily, and that's why we're doing the daily press conferences, which hopefully people are finding helpful and informative, because we think it is important that the general public is kept up to date, because, as we all know, if people don't have the information, sometimes rumours can develop out there. And it is very, very important we don't let that happen, because, you know, there's a lot of vulnerable and worried people out there, and we don't want them to be more worried than they need to be if they're hearing scare stories that aren't true.
A word now about care homes. Obviously, we have upwards of how many care, is it 40 plus care homes on the Isle of Man?
If you take the intermediate homes as well, so not those who'd necessarily be nursing care but would be the intermediate level, then yes, it would be roughly around about that figure.
Somebody wrote in and said the situation regarding care homes, who apparently they may be risking breaking the staff-to-resident ratio because of self-isolating staff. Would they be prosecuted if they broke the ratio?
Right. Registration Inspections has written to all care homes and other organisations as well in this sort of sector, and has actually said that while obviously we're in this state of emergency, we recognise there will be pressures on staff. It is important they still comply with health and safety, but if someone was to just tip over the staff ratio, they would not be prosecuted for it. What is important is that people apply, again, I dread to use the phrase common sense, Andy, but that all it applies to organisations as well, that they apply common sense, and that they do anything they do within the care homes is on a risk basis. So they actually manage out any potential risks, and that would include staff ratios as well.
Okay, because I had another one wrote in just to say, obviously they're down, some are 30% down on staff because of self-isolation, but they're having trouble recruiting, not because of the people aren't available, because of the delays in the DBS process, the criminal record check.
Yeah, I mean, the DBS process obviously is not just done this end, it's also done in the UK as well. And as you can imagine, there's pressures on both systems. So during this period, there is going to be delays. The UK also has an awful lot of returning medical professionals, as do we, that require certain checks as well. So the system will be under strain in that regard. But as I said, you know, Registration Inspections is not going to take action against someone purely on staff ratio numbers. Any action would only be taken if a premise took actions that were clearly going to put their residents at risk.
Okay. Is it mandatory for care home staff to be tested?
It is not mandatory. It is not mandatory testing. Mandatory testing and the clinical advice and public health advice around that is there's not necessarily a benefit to it. Now, that might sound strange at first, but the logic behind it is you could be tested on the Monday, but you could come into contact with someone who's asymptomatic and obtain the disease on the Tuesday. But your test result would come back on the Wednesday or Thursday saying that you're free of the disease. Mandatory testing in many respects can actually give a false sense of security, because all it shows is that you don't have the virus at that particular point of time. Unless you were mandatory testing everyone every single day, which is not practically possible, then mandatory testing doesn't give the benefit that some people think it does.
Okay. This is a note in from John, who said, when's the DHSC going to provide Tesco with a vulnerable person list? I'm shielding due to leukemia and I can't get delivery slots. Tesco in the UK have NHS vulnerable persons notified to them and are making priority slots available.
Right. I need to clear something up on this, because obviously I've had a lot of correspondence around this. We can provide a list if Tesco's wishes to have it. As far as I'm aware, there's been no contact from Tesco's asking for such a list from us. We could only share people's information with their permission. But what we need to clear up is what the vulnerable persons list in the UK actually is. And it is those, because people seem to think they can add their names to it. The list that's gone out in the UK is very precise. It is those that are known to them via their adult social care services. So it isn't a list where people can just apply to get themselves on it. It's very specific. Now, obviously, the gentleman concerned there with his conditions, he probably would appear on such a list anyway. But a lot of people who've been contacting me seem to think the UK is some open list that the UK government has just gone out to people and compiled. It's not. It's very, very specific to those that they know of that are vulnerable via their adult social care services. It's not a list that people can just apply onto. But to date, we've not had, as far as I'm aware, any contact from Tesco's asking for such a list.
So if Tesco did get in touch with you, you could provide a list?
We could provide a list, but obviously we would need the permission of those individuals to share their details.
Okay. Could you explain the term presumed to have recovered from the virus?
Right. Yes, I certainly can. So presumed to have recovered from the virus is the proper medical term. People who are following worldwide data will see it presented normally as recovered, as total recovered. Ours are done in exactly the same way. So presumed recovered basically means once you have the virus, you generally will have it at maximum in your system for 14 days. So once you pass the 14-day period from when you start showing symptoms, assuming you have not been in contact or had a hospital admission or your situation hasn't deteriorated, then you are presumed recovered. That's exactly the same way that the World Health Organization reports on recovered cases around the world.
And
the only difference in the language is we are using the actual proper medical language, which is presumed recovered, because obviously there is no test undertaken to show someone, or even a test available to show someone has recovered. Whereas other countries in the world sometimes just name it as recovered.
Right, because Dennis dropped me a note to say, ask the minister, are the presumed recovered being retested?
No, and as far as I'm aware, no country in the world does that. We work off the World Health Organization's measurement, which is the 14 days from symptoms. But the only difference is we are using the proper, I've insisted we use the proper medically defined language, which is presumed recovered, whereas a lot of countries, if people go online and look, just call it total recovered. But it's measured in exactly the same way.
Okay, a lady dropped me a note to say, I'm currently waiting and have been now for nearly 5 weeks for a breast scan for a lump. I was called the day before my appointment and was told the only radiologist on the Isle of Man was in quarantine. My appointment could be 12 weeks away. My doctor's been very helpful trying to get things moving with no result, nothing from the clinic. I haven't told my family, so obviously I'm not going to mention the lady's name. I can understand things are busy, but surely they should be in contact. What's happening at the radiology department?
Right, in relation to that, it's not just around the fact that of one particular consultant. Unfortunately, most of our cancer services we have had to shut down to reprioritise and to move people onto other duties. That's exactly the same in the UK as well. In other countries, it is an exceptionally difficult time for cancer patients, and I'm not, you know, or potential people awaiting scans. I'm not going to try and shy away from that. It's an exceptionally worrying time for them as well. But we have had to focus on the response to this virus, and that has meant redeploying staff across the whole of DHSC, and many of the services that we have previously offered have had to be suspended, and it has had to be done on a clinical risk basis in consultation with our clinicians, and cancer services is one of those that has been deeply affected, exactly as it has in the UK.
Can you tell us what the building works going on at the hospital? What's the wall around the helicopter pad?
So the building works going up is in relation to, well, there's several sets of building works to be. There's the building works I referred to at the very start of the show today, which is around the old Newlands area, where we're looking to get the additional 50 beds in. In relation to the helipad, there's some structural works being done for certain aircraft to be able to come into the island if required. So there's a mixture of building works going up, but the major building works is the building of the additional space for the 50 beds up around Newlands.
Sue, a message from Sue now. Could you ask Mr. Ashford if shops will be encouraged to increase the protection of customers by till staff changing gloves for each customer? It's worrying that they're wearing the same gloves for long periods of time while handling cash and different customers' items and increasing the risk of contamination. Some sandwich bars don't change their gloves very often, says that. I'd appreciate if my name is not used, says the lady.
I mean, certainly those who are dealing with food, they should be changing their gloves regularly. That's the case even before we had this outbreak. That's general food hygiene. In relation to checkout staff, the risk of contamination of things such as money, most studies around the world are still showing it as relatively low. In terms of that, it's just general hand hygiene that helps. So I'm not sure in relation to till checkout, people changing their gloves on every single occasion is necessarily going to be of that much benefit. But certainly those that are involved in the preparation of food, they most certainly should be changing their gloves regularly.
And the situation, Nick, a message from Nick just says, what's happening with regard to supporting people with mental health issues?
Well, interestingly, I've got the Chief Constable at the press conference today, but tomorrow we're doing the press conference around mental health and mental health support. The mental health team have been in touch with people that they know to check they're okay. We have been monitoring the more vulnerable people that we're aware of because, you know, this is a stressful time for everyone and people, you know, will be struggling. Mental health support is still available. The crisis team is still available and accessible if people are struggling. But I would also urge people who are struggling with mental health to talk about it. There's no shame in talking to friends and family and seeking support, and there's no shame in being honest that you're struggling. You know, people should be able to speak openly about it. So the support functions of mental health are there, and I know they are working exceptionally hard to try and help people through this difficult time. And it is a difficult time for a lot of people in our community.
Okay, Minister, we'll take a break for a couple of minutes. Time for a quick cup of tea. And we're going to be back with our Health and Social Care Minister, David Ashford, between now and one. Just a quick note, the Villa Gaiety has announced it all scheduled performances and events up until the end of September this year will no longer go ahead. We're back with David Ashford in a moment, live on The Man in Line. If you want to get in touch, you can call 66 13 68. Email and text to
The Man in Line with Andy Wint, furnished by Magic Carpets.
Good afternoon. It's 28 minutes to one. Back with David Ashford, MHK, of course, our Health and Social Care Minister. Minister, what's the situation with patient transfer? Is that working okay?
It is at the moment. Obviously, we've very much minimised our patient transfer situation. So only those who really, really critically require treatment in the UK are now going. We've tried to look at on-island options for support for as many people as possible. People aren't going over just for general consultations anymore. They're either being undertaken by phone or video conference. So it is exceptionally limited, the people who are travelling. Most of those that are travelling are the really serious, critically ill patients. So it's been scaled back quite a long way.
OK. Malcolm, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Malcolm. You're on with the Minister for Health and Social Care.
Hello, Malcolm.
Oh, good morning, Minister. My query is a simple one, really. I'm concerned about people in communal social housing, and they share the bins with all the people on their estate very often. They go to those bins very often without wearing gloves and will pick up, or could pick up, anything that their predecessors who have used those bins might have got. And I wondered whether you might be prepared to give a direction to the various local authorities so that notices were put out on all the bins, all the communal bins, asking people to wear gloves when they do this or advising them to do so.
Okay, Minister.
I know certainly, Malcolm, in relation to some local authorities, they've already gone out with advice, not just for communal bins, but even with ordinary bins. I know, for instance, obviously I'm a Douglas MHK, I'm a former Douglas councillor as well, and I know Douglas Council recently went out with a communication asking people to wipe their bin handles, wear gloves, etc. In terms of communal bins, these days most bins are plastic, rather than the metal bins. We know from studies around the world the amount of time that the virus can survive on different surfaces is radically different. The most concerning surface is metal. In relation to plastic, there is a very, very limited amount of time that the virus has been shown that can actually survive. The key thing for people is hand hygiene, because the way the virus would be contracted would be someone touching something with the virus on and then immediately afterwards touching their face, because it's transmitted via bodily fluids, so either the mouth, the eyes, the nose, etc. So regular hand hygiene by people is the most important thing, what a lot of us basically were taught at school.
Okay,
those
thank you.
With that generation.
That's great, Malcolm. Thank you for that. And it's Jill. Hello, Jill.
Hello.
Hi, Jill. You're on.
If you could help me. I have friends. One of them is being shielded. The other one has type 2 diabetes, so they cannot possibly go out at all. But they don't seem to be getting any information about what help they can receive.
Would this be in terms of what particular help, Jill? Because that would depend where I direct them to.
Right, the health, she has a serious lung disease.
So what would they be looking for help for? Is that with shopping?
We are shopping at the moment, but my concern is they haven't had any information from anybody about what sort of help they could possibly get. There's nobody to shop for them. There's nobody to do anything for them.
Right, OK. Well, we've had several organisations, including the Live at Home Scheme, etc., that have actually offered to support people in that regard. What I would suggest, I'll give you an email, if I may, Jill, for them to contact.
Yeah.
Which would be the Adult Social Care. So if they could contact Adult Referrals.
Yeah.
.DSC.
Dot what? Sorry.
DSC.
DSC.
At gov.im.
Okay.
And then from there, they'll be able to put them in touch with organisations that should be able to help them in that regard, particularly around the shopping and getting supplies for them.
We are shopping for them right now, but the concern is, if my husband and I got the virus, there is nobody to shop for them.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So we have had organisations, like I say, a lot of third sector organisations who've been stepping in to help with various things, including Crossroads, the Live at Home schemes across the island.
Okay.
If they get in touch with that email address, then they'll be able to direct them.
Okay,
And if they don't get any joys there, by all means, get them to get in touch with me.
Okay, lovely. Thank you very much. Thank
you. Okay, thanks, Jill. Mr. Ashford, here's another note in. This is from John, and it concerns graphs. You must be sick and tired of seeing graphs. Graphs of different epidemic curves according to the effectiveness of social distancing. Could you give a more detailed explanation about the predicted number of cases including those not tested as well. Which graphs are you relying on to know how many projected cases there'll be on the Isle of Man, Minister?
Right, we have our own. We have done our own medical modelling. The Isle of Man, we constantly say, is unique, and it's important we do actually treat ourselves as unique. So we're not using UK modelling. We are actually looking at our own trend data. Now, all of the decisions that the government has taken along the way and at the various stages, which, as I referred to, we had various stages for when first case identified, when community transmission was identified, actually mapped out. We know from worldwide that most people who are infected will go on to infect roughly around about two other people. If the virus isn't controlled in the community, that can actually increase to exponentially to the one person infecting five people, who then it grows exponentially until at that point you're in a situation such as Italy. So we've had various curves mapped out. So when you hear me say about flattening the curve, that's what we're talking about. We've got various curves mapped out. What would have happened if we hadn't have done anything? And if the Isle of Man government had sat back and not taken the actions that we had planned, we would have actually seen our health services overwhelmed on day 22. So day 22 after the first case emerged, we did take action, shutting the borders, etc. And what that's allowed us to do is flatten the curve, and we have predictions on that as well that actually show how many cases we would expect on a daily basis. At the moment, although it is still very, very early to say, the stats that are coming in on a daily basis are in line with our projection of being able to flatten the curve, which obviously is encouraging. But I do need to stress we've only at the moment got a couple of weeks' worth of data, and we can't take that for granted. But it does appear that the actions that we have taken is flattening out that curve and spreading the caseload at a manageable level.
Howard, hello.
Hello, Andy. Good afternoon, Minister.
Good afternoon, Howard.
Just a curio, and it's something we haven't heard of. These people are returning home, and the numbers are increasing on a daily basis. They went from 20 to 200 now. What provision does the government have in recovering costs for the return flights, the accommodation in the UK, and accommodation in the Isle of Man for the isolation period, etc.? Will it be claimed back on their travel insurance, as they're not officially in their place of abode until they actually go through the front door of their own house?
Right. What I can say in answer to that, Howard, is that people will be responsible for their own costs. We made that clear when we announced this. So people will be responsible for the costs of the accommodation while they're held for the 14 days. They will also obviously be responsible for their costs of getting back to the island, which while they're in the UK at the moment, there is no packages of support in place. That is something that's being looked at along with the repatriation scheme, but currently there isn't any support in that sense available. The numbers I just want to touch on, because you mentioned about going from 20 to the 200. The 20 was those we initially knew of in the UK. The vast majority of people are actually further afield than the UK. Most people who were in the UK did get back before the border closure. They took heed of the messages we put out there to get home. Unfortunately, those that were further afield, it wasn't as easy for them to do that. So a lot of those people we won't be able to assist until they're repatriated back into the UK. Obviously, those who would qualify for income-assisted benefits because they're low income, they may be able to seek support in relation to some of those costs, but it is being done on the user pays principle.
Can I just ask, Minister, where will those returnees, where will those people coming back, will they muster at Morecambe or Lancaster? Where will they gather?
So it will be Heysham, and it will be done in a it will actually be done in a clinically managed way. So there will be limited numbers per sailing. As I stressed when I made the announcement on Monday at the press conference, this isn't a free-for-all. It isn't people just turning up. People will be contacted by the Cabinet Office and given a slot. We will generally use the cabins on the boat to separate the crew from those returning. And upon arrival in the island, they will then be transported to where they need to do the 14 days quarantine.
Anything else, Howard?
One little thing there, too. In the past, they've always emphasised the government have pressed for this, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. A lot of people use their bank cards for the travel insurance. Well, the repatriation there will only be to the UK. Now, this makes a very strong point, which the government has been putting over for ages. Make sure your insurance repatriates you back to the Isle of Man.
Yes, that is one of the, one of the key things, messages. I mean, obviously, it's hindsight, as with all these things, but it is important, and I've always stressed this in other interviews I've done since I became Minister for Health and Social Care, that, you know, it's important people ensure that the travel insurance they have is right for them and covers the potential circumstances that they might face. This is a bit of a unique one. Obviously, this is a pandemic like the world hasn't seen for 101 years since the Spanish flu. So it is rather unique, and some people probably have fallen foul of their travel policies in that regard. But I always stress and always have stressed that when people, ever people travel off Ireland, it is important that they have a travel package and they do read what their travel insurance will cover so that it's right for them.
Okay. Thanks, Howard.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Andy.
All right.
Thanks,
good to Howard. Talk to you as well. For another one for David Ashford, can you ask David to give the housekeepers a shout out at the hospital? Nobody ever mentions them.
I certainly will. It is actually, it's on my list, so I will try and get it in properly and officially at the press conference today. The housekeeping staff, they are the front line up there. It really, really is appreciated, the work that they've undertaken. I have spoken to a couple of the housekeepers who I know. They are under as much strain as anyone else across our health and social care services and across all our industries in the Isle of Man. And, you know, I really, really do appreciate the work they're undertaking at this stressful time. They're continuing to get on with the job, and it's very much appreciated.
Roger. Hello, Roger.
Hello. Good afternoon. Message for the Minister, please.
You're on now.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Minister.
Hello, Roger.
Hello. My question is, as I understand it, on the 15th of April, we're going to be bringing some local residents back, and the condition is they're going to be in designated accommodation under strict quarantine for something like 14 days.
Yes.
Okay. Well, my question is pessimistic, but in the event of during that quarantine, have you got a contingency plan that if, God forbid, any reason the accommodation had to be evacuated, fire, flood, explosion, anything you could think of, I presume the people that are under quarantine would have to have a muster point, which have to be weather protected, social distancing, etc. Then they would have to be moved from there to accommodation B. So logistically would be a nightmare. And I presume if that was to happen, then their quarantine would have to start again. So the question in a nutshell is there any contingency plan for if an event like that was to happen?
Yeah, there is logistical planning going on around what would happen if any of the quarantine facilities became unavailable for whatever reason. Just to clarify, it wouldn't necessarily mean, depending on how it was handled, that their 14 days would have to start again. The areas that are being looked at, although I can't publicly name them at the moment, as I described earlier, one is rural, one is semi-rural. So there is grounds to these particular premises, which means you would allow muster points with people still social distancing away from each other. They wouldn't all be confined, bunched up in a car park, so to speak. In the extreme event that the facility became unavailable, there would be an alternative facility to be able to be used, and people would be able to be medically transported to that facility. So there is logistical plans going on in the background that would allow that. But also the other thing is, as I made absolutely abundantly clear as well, is we will be bringing people back in groups. It's not a free-for-all for people to decide when they are coming back. They will be given slots to come back, and that does mean that we won't be operating the facilities at full capacity, should we say. That it won't be a case of we'll be piling people high in these facilities. It's going to be done in a very clinically managed way.
OK, thank you, Roger, for that call.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint. furnished by Magic Carpets.
And we're live with the Minister for Health and Social Care, David Ashford, MHK, who's going to be on with the Chief Constable, Gary Roberts, this afternoon for the media briefing at 4 o'clock. Please ask the Minister this question. Families that have had a member treated positive for COVID-19 are only being tested one person per family. The other family members are presumed to have it without requiring a test. Is this still the case, Minister?
Yes, it is, and that is the clinical situation in most of the world. I need to get across again the reason for testing. I need to emphasise that the reason we do testing in the community is not to actually tell individuals they have it or don't have it for their benefit. The reason we do the community testing is so that we can identify cases and then break the chain, so isolate the whole household. So the purpose of testing isn't to identify one or two or three individuals within a household and say, you've got it, you haven't. It's about breaking the spread of the virus chain in the community. So if one person in the household is tested positive, it is automatically presumed that others in the household, even if they're not showing symptoms, that they would be asymptomatic and they should therefore isolate as well for the 14 days.
To the Health Minister, a question. Why are nurses and doctors and health workers at the grandstand testing station only given mouth masks and not the full Monty?
Because that is, actually the ones using up at the grandstand, if you notice, quite a few of them are using visors as well. So the visors is the important part of that outfit. In relation to PPE, there's very, very strict guidance, which has been drawn up by the clinicians themselves as to what PPE is to be used, and those that are taking the swabbing are actually using the appropriate PPE.
When will COVID-19 blow itself out? When will it all kind of, if you pardon the expression, die a natural death?
Well, we're in new territory. We honestly don't know with this virus. It's a brand new virus. We don't have a bank of data to be able to look back on. Obviously, you know, you had SARS that was one stage looking like a threat to the world that just disappeared overnight. It doesn't look like COVID-19 is going to go down that route. It doesn't look like it's seasonal. We've got to take the long-term view that this is going to be around for quite a while, at least even at a low level. But the important thing for us is that we spread out the cases that emerge to ensure that our health services don't end up overwhelmed. And that is exactly why government has been taking the actions that it has at each of the stages. And certainly on the evidence we've got at the moment, although again, I need to emphasise very limited evidence, we do seem to be flattening our curve, but we need a lot more data before we can be confident in that.
A note in from Sheila, and this is a personal question, Mr. Ashford. You've been in public life a long time now. How do you feel the Isle of Man people are handling this situation?
I have been exceptionally impressed. Yes, it's believe it or not, it's 12 years, Andy, since I was first elected as a Douglas councillor this year. I don't know where that decade and a bit has gone. So, yes, I've been a bit round the block over that time. But I think the Isle of Man community has handled this absolutely fabulously. The overwhelming majority of people are abiding by all the social distancing rules, everything else. You look at some of the issues the UK has had in trying to get the message across to people and actually get people to abide by it. They've really struggled in many areas. I think the way the Ireland community has reacted has shown once again how unique the Isle of Man is and why we're so lucky to be living on this island.
A note in from John said, regarding Howard's comment about regarding repatriation through insurance, the policies with Isle of Man Bank and NatWest do repatriate back to the Isle of Man. Other banks are available, he said. Stella, who said, you said the people are being brought back in stages. How many at a time?
So that figure is still to be worked up. It would depend upon what our clinicians say is safe to use on the boat. So I would expect the figure to be around about the 30 mark. So I would expect it to be done in batches of 30.
When will the civic amenity sites be reopened, the TIPS?
That will be done on a clinical risk basis. As I stated, I think it was at yesterday's press conference. I lose a bit of the track of days these days, Andy. I think I stated at yesterday's press conference that everything that we do including the exit strategy where different industries can be reopened, would be based on clinical risk. So we'd have to assess sector by sector, and that would include the TIPS, the civic amenity sites, on what the risk to the staff and the users of those sites are, and we would act on that medical advice.
Yes, we got a note in from Mike Rose in Peel, who said the TIPS were closed basically to stop people going out. Is that right?
No, it wasn't just that. It most certainly wasn't just a case of we'd shut the TIPS to stop people going out. It was obviously the staff who work in those amenity sites. Realistically, with some of the tasks they undertake, not all but some, they can't do the social distancing, and we had to look at the risk profile. So of course the civic amenity site closure is, as with all the decisions that we take, is constantly under review, and that may be one of the things that we can relax early on in the restrictions, but I've got to stress again, it will be done very firmly in line with clinical advice and a proper risk assessment of the risk, not just to the general public using the site, but also those people who would need to operate the site as well.
And finally, David Ashford, how much further will the Isle of Man government go in the lockdown? Is a curfew in prospect?
That's certainly not in prospect at the moment. As I say, we've still got very little data at the moment because we've only got a couple of weeks' worth to see how we're doing on flattening the curve. It ties in with just what I was saying before. The overwhelming majority of people are being responsible. They are social distancing. They are abiding by the rules that we've put in place, and I'm exceptionally grateful for that, particularly as we've got a long Easter weekend coming up, and I know we are asking people to basically sacrifice that this year, but it's for the greater good of our community. At the moment, there are no plans to enforce a wider lockdown. We would need much more data before we're able to say truly where we are in that graph that we keep referring to and our curve.
We've had a note in from Jersey. Some of the government in Jersey is almost ready to tell the financial sector to work from home. They're almost close to closing the banks down and making sure people work from home in the finance sector. Any signs of that here?
At the moment, that's not being required. That's certainly not at the moment being on the consideration list. We have shut those sectors that, on a clinical basis, we deemed risk. Those are already shut, and at the moment there is no plans to go another stage further in that regard. One of the things we've got to remember, though, is in terms of the measures we took our measures a lot earlier in stages than Jersey and Guernsey down in the Channel Islands. So some of the actions we took, even prior to having our first case identified, they weren't taking till after they had several dozen cases and community transmission emerging. So we're in a very different direction of travel. I don't really want to say a thing about, you know, the Isle of Man's got to be looked at as the Isle of Man rather than compared to other jurisdictions, but we are in a very different journey to some of our counterparts.
Thank you very much indeed. You've been listening to our Minister for Health and Social Care, David Ashford. Thanks to him, and thanks to you, and thanks to producer Ben Hartley.